All right.
We're live.
Awesome. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing good. Summer is still here in Toronto.
Yeah. It's getting chilly here. It's starting to have fall weather, which I kind of like.
Yeah.
Should we kick off the show?
Let's do it.
All right. Welcome to the Gregory and Paul Show. I'm Gregory.
I'm Paul.
And we break down the latest in SaaS, startups, AI, memes, whatever the internet has been debating this week. We got a lot of stuff in store for you today. We'll talk about the TikTok deal. There's some interesting stuff happening at OpenAI. Cloudflare is doing some interesting things.
Yeah, it's the birthday week.
Paul, where are we at with turning this into a podcast? Is that ever going to happen?
Soon. It's been, what, 6 months?
And we've been... I think it's fine. I'm happy that we have it as a YouTube show. And then I spent some time like chopping up all the clips, uploading them to Twitter or X and YouTube as shorts. And that's been pretty cool. Right. So we'll take one step at a time. You know, do people really want to listen to this? Maybe.
At the gym? Everywhere?
I like at the gym. I do listen at the, like, on, especially on like a Sunday, it's really nice to go and get really Joe Rogan and like work out and like listen to some
tech banter.
Some tech bro podcasts. I kind of enjoy it, like just broing out like that sometimes. It's fun.
Okay. I take into consideration.
Does that work for you? No.
No comment.
All right. Let's talk about TikTok.
Yeah. So what's going on? TikTok is fully diversified? Divested?
I believe the term would be that the acquisition has been completed by the consortium of
U.S.
MAGA Bros.
MAGA Bros.
Yeah, people have been having some fun with this. Like the president clearly has had some hand in the deal making here.
Right.
But it looks like the thing's closed. It's been announced. You know, we talked a bit about this, like all running on servers. And so what I did, so we talked last year about the algorithm. So supposedly, at least what's being reported is that the U.S. or the people who are in charge of the new entity have control over the U.S. algorithm.
Gotcha. So we're data is onshored, right? With Oracle, I suppose?
Correct. Yeah. I was also, I did some research into this. Like, for what I can tell, like the data had already been ported over, but it still had foreign ownership. And that was the thing that they were like, this was heavily debated in Congress at one point, right? A lot of people flip flop back and forth. Like the Democrats are for it and the Republicans are against it and the Republicans are for it. The Democrats are against it. I can't even keep track of who is for it, who's against it at this point, because it's gone back and forth so much, but it was debated at the, let's say, federal congressional level. There were different laws that were passed that were going to force the owners to sell it. And it looks like that has now happened. So it is a U.S. owned entity, at least a U.S. version. And the other controversy that has come out of it is this. So I guess
it's $14 billion.
It's been made public what the value of it was. And so there's two arguments here. One is that it's quite cheap.
Yeah, that seems low.
What
is it comparable to?
So this chart, it lists it as a similar price to the valuation of Snapchat.
I see.
It lists X there at the top, $44 billion, which so there, yeah.
Purchased at, that's right, yeah, 420 on the secured.
I like this chart. I think it's an interesting debate. I think there's so many arguments to make in so many different directions. Like, I'm not really sure who's correct here. So you could say like X was bought at the peak of the market. Elon was clearly, drank way more than too much coffee that day when he hit the buy button by mistake and bought Twitter for like the maximum price that ultimately went to court and he was forced to pay. So right. Is that really what the value of X is? Like, it's definitely not what it's valued at today. I guess like that is a valuation of Reddit from the public markets. Is that correct? You know, $43 billion.
$43 billion. Yeah.
That's like current valuation today in public markets.
Let me double check. Yeah, correct. 44 billion. I think they opened a year ago at about like a quarter of this.
Yeah.
So they've gone up a lot.
Paul, what do you think about the Reddit bubble?
The Reddit bubble? I think there's more to grow.
More to go. Yeah. More to go. Does this seem like that? This is an interesting chart, right? Like, that's a rich value for Reddit. No.
$44 billion. So from everything that I've been hearing, I think there's more room to grow.
Yeah. But interesting. I mean, is Reddit more powerful, more significant, more prominent than X, Pinterest, Snapchat, and TikTok?
Yeah, international for sure.
So I guess after like talking through this chart with you, like, so clearly Pinterest doesn't have the mind share that TikTok has, right? And
for sure, yeah.
Snapchat is like for teens, it's still popular. So, and knowing that Reddit is at that level, I would say that, yeah, 14 billion vastly undervalues this company if you're looking at it relative to Reddit. I'm sure TikTok's revenue, I don't know if that was revealed. I've seen other people talking about it, but I don't know if those are actual numbers. But we all know that TikTok's revenue is, I'm sure it's just incredible. That company is printing money.
I think so too. I think it's like, maybe it's just like I think it's just misconception that TikTok is still for teenagers, Gen Zs predominantly. I think that's a misconception. So like if you think about it, right, like if you assign entire generation of Gen Zs to TikTok, then maybe the purchasing power of the TikTok user isn't as great as, let's say, Reddit.
Because they're mostly young people. I don't
know. Most of the young people. But I think millennials are using TikTok a lot
too. Well, what do you think? Do you think that they underpriced this, overpriced it, priced it right?
Completely underpriced, I think.
So the other interesting thing, so there was a thread, I couldn't find it. I wanted to share it, but it's buried in Twitter somewhere.
Yeah.
Jason Calcanis was posting this thing like, oh, look, like the president got the valuation down for his MAGA buddies. And then someone replied, famous VC, under current US law, TikTok is worth zero. And now it's worth 14 billion. So you can make the argument that they were going to shut it down. It's against the law. The US government decided this is an illegal platform. And so they're lucky to get anything for it, which, I was doing some negotiation stuff this morning. Like, that's a clever angle and a fair assessment. Whether it's correct or not, it shows that like you can take the other side and I think make an effective argument. Like if the law says this thing's banned, and lo and behold, we're going to let you live.
Right. They'll just disappear.
I mean, take whatever valuation you can get.
there's a platform risk to everything, isn't there?
I think that's putting it mildly, yes. So, okay, that's interesting. Should we move on?
Yeah, I think, let's move on.
All right, what's next? Oh, this is mine. Okay. So this was interesting.
Would you say this is... let's talk about it and let's what's controversial about this.
Yeah, this is so I saw this and it was posted on X and the reporter's like, scoop, OpenAI looks to build in-house ad infrastructure. They were like very excited about it.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, almost positioned as like, does the OpenAI ad product release? Can I buy ads on there? That's not what I read at all from this article, which is interesting. It's just an article about they posted a job opening for someone who is going to be on their user acquisition team and buy ads. And they're going to add engineers to that and build out some infrastructure, which is, you know, interesting, but like not groundbreaking, earth-shattering news. Right. Lots of other companies own their own advertising technology. If you buy enough ads at enough scale, it makes sense to start building your own team. You can harvest your own data. There's a lot of reasons to do it, right? But right. I think, like, for me, it highlights the fact that a lot of people in the industry get confused between being a publisher and being an advertiser. And it's easy to get confused because there's two sides to this market.
Right.
In this case, this is about them being an advertiser. They're buying ads to drive traffic and users to their application. The other side is being a publisher where they sell ads. And so a lot of these large tech companies that have both technology and people and things happening on the publishing and advertising side, it's easy for, let's say, journalists who perhaps don't understand this as well as they should to get confused or like knowingly like misrepresent this to get people to like click through and then read the article and find out it's just about a job opening and they're hiring a GTM engineer.
It's a clickbaity title.
I am really interested to hear more about the OpenAI ad product. I've heard rumors here and there. It's really clear to me that they will do something, but this article doesn't. I couldn't find anything in here at all about it. It's all about their relationship with advertising agencies and buying ads. I mean, they ran a Super Bowl commercial, right? They're doing a lot to market themselves, and it's newsworthy.
For sure.
You know, buying a Super Bowl commercial or tech company is interesting. I have mixed feelings about it. I thought it was cool, although I think they should have done something else, but it's a different discussion.
Yeah, I see they're buying ads on Reddit. So
it makes sense, right? They have so much data that they can use to improve the targeting and do interesting things with their advertising. So I'm not, I think it's almost like a non-news item that they're building out a great acquisition team. Like, they need to get people to use the app, right? I mean, they raise all that money.
do you think for a company like OpenAI, are they targeting like traffic and brand name ads, like at the top of a funnel, or are they, what do you think their strategy is? Is it like a full funnel or?
For their product?
Yeah, like what's their goal? Probably downloads and subscriptions, right? Like any other business?
You mean for them to acquire users or as a publishing tool, like what ad product would they release?
No. I mean, like as a media buyer,
Yeah, as a buyer. So I think the way I read this, this is for acquisition.
For acquisition. So like users.
Yeah. Like if they're buying ads on Reddit, all that stuff.
Right.
So like this frames it really well. So few companies build their own ad buying systems outside of giants like Google, Meta, or Amazon, and typically rely on agencies or third parties to handle campaign automation and measurement.
Sure.
So there's also other notable companies that, like PayPal, a lot of big tech companies, Walmart, have built their own in-house technology to do the measurement and ad buying piece.
Right.
There's a lot of reasons to do it. Like ultimately, for a company of that size, it could be a lot cheaper, because they can hire all of their own team rather than pay the fees to a third party.
Yeah, for sure.
You remove all those third party fees. And if they have the engineering team who are good at this stuff, which I assume they can get, they can even arbitrage those ads and get an even better price.
Yeah, you'll get different types of inventory than like the
open or just market. Buy it at a better cost because they have so much information and so much data that they can use from their own system. They could just be better at buying ads for their own acquisition than a third party could.
Yeah. So OpenAI is pushing towards that. So, okay. Question here, right? Like, so they've rolled the wave of ChatGPT for what, 2 years now? Is this like a signal of reaching the top?
That's interesting. I thought the same thing too, right? That like, they're making this big investment into buying and building, essentially building their own internal acquisition platform to acquire users. I was like, does that mean that they're like growing more slowly than they have been in the past?
That's my question. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to speculate on this. You know, when I was a long time ago involved in campaigns for really large apps, not this, but I don't want to say the name, but like really, really significant applications of this scale.
Yep.
There are certain markets sometimes where they just have to buy their way in. So I don't know anything specific about what their strategy is here.
Okay.
But let's say that they want to get another 10 million users in Africa, or they're trying to penetrate India. There's just certain markets where, for whatever reason, they just don't have the same level of mind share and virality that they do in the US and perhaps UK, or let's call it English language markets, right? That's usually how these things play out. Like, we all speak English, it's pretty straightforward. But there's other markets where they're not growing as fast. And so for strategic reasons, they're like, we just need to generate a lot of downloads, or you generate a lot of users in these locations. So I've seen that strategy specifically, right? Like, they were going to go IPO and they're like, we need to show a lot more traction in Africa. And so we're going to do a huge ad campaign to build our footprint there. So that's one reason that they could be doing this, is to just like drive it in certain markets where they're not as strong.
I see. So still room to grow. And seems like this is the only way to spend.
Yeah, I think you're correct too, that like, I mean, the virality and the organic growth has to have slowed, right? There's, how much could it grow? There's some point where there's, let's call them laggards, people that just don't spend every waking hour online like you and I, who you probably need to attract through ads.
Got it. Yep. I see.
So yeah, I think that's the other scenario here, is like they've just scaled, so they've tapped out all the organic stuff. There's people who like, they never go on Twitter, X, Snapchat, TikTok. They don't use any of those things.
Yeah.
And they want to grab those users. And so advertising might be the best way to do it, even in a market like the United States.
Yeah, got it. Very interesting.
Have we beat that one to death? I could talk about ad tech all day long. It's not my favorite thing, but...
Yeah, let's move on. So, it is the birthday week of Cloudflare, one of my favorite tech companies out there.
Did you get them a cake?
I did not.
Was his name Matthew Prince? Isn't he the?
He's the CEO. Yeah.
We should send him a cake. We should send him a cake. We should put our little Ghibli image on it and send it to him next year. Next year we'll do it as of an anniversary. That would be awesome.
That would be epic.
So epic. I'd love to do that. We should do it to everybody. I want to send one to Peter Thiel. Would he appreciate it?
I think so. Isn't he a vegan? So you got to be a vegan.
I was just thinking that. I'm sure he doesn't eat cake. There's just no way.
A vegan cake? Is that a thing? There must be.
I had a vegan cake at my birthday.
Oh, perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Was it good?
I enjoyed it. My wife's like, it's a little dry. But it was pretty rich, pretty chocolatey. And like, we had it in this venue, and I had to cut the cake myself, and they gave me this crazy rubber knife. I'd never seen anything like it. Like, you could literally like bend it and stuff, and it was like really hard to cut like a vegan cake. Anyway.
That's awesome.
All right, what's this cloud for the thing?
Okay, so this week they're launching a ton of products, so I'm not going to get into everything, but I saw this one and it stood out to me. So this is kind of Cloudflare's answer to essentially building your own vibe coding platform.
Dude, crazy.
It's awesome. So essentially what you can do is you can launch your own vibe coding platform trained on your own internal data with your own internal prompts, and you can use it to do anything, right? So for example, instead of building apps, you could use this to vibe code discovery reports as a dev agency. You could literally use this to do anything, create a financial, personal financial tracker. You could get this to...
You're breaking my brain. So like it's a platform to make vibe coding tools. Is that correct?
Yeah. So like this is basically an open source platform that lets you make something that's make a open source Figma or open source lovable, let's say.
Cool. So anyone can start just creating their own vibe coding tools.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't even describe. I feel like it's very meta. I can't even describe it right. So anyone can create their own
vibe coding platform.
Right. Their own tools to vibe code stuff. Wait, I can't even get it right. So you're able to put, does it mean that like you could put this on top of any existing like application?
Actually, yes. Actually, yes. Yes. So like you could integrate this directly into any SaaS, and if some part of your SaaS if some part of your SaaS has like creation involved, you could just replace all of that like button click with this tool.
Right. So it's like you could put like, maybe the way to frame this is like you could use a chat interface with natural language for people to use your tool, which would give it like a vibe coding type of experience.
That's correct. That's possible.
Right? Yeah, that's
correct.
Like I said, this is breaking my brain, dude.
It's very meta. This is like vibe coding. It's like vibe coding, vibe coding.
Exactly. It's like meta. I know the meta level to it is like hard. I don't have the proper language to describe it.
Yeah. Okay. So like basically all of these tools like Lovable, Bolt on You, now you can have your own version of it.
Everyone can build their own.
You can build your own.
Do you remember Ning? You probably don't. They were a social network. They raised a ton of money Ning, N-I-N-G. I'm sure it's not around anymore. I don't even know if they have the URL anymore. It was a build your own social network.
Okay.
Is it still the same thing? Yeah. Build your own social. Yeah. Create your own social, create a social network. So it's kind of the same idea, but it was like, they raised a ton of money at like the peak of the social networking craze.
Yeah.
And it was a build your own social network. So it's like, this is how you know, like we're going up the hype curve.
Yeah.
We're at the, like, there's so much interest in vibe tools. We're at the like, make your own vibe tool.
Make your own vibe tool. Correct.
Yeah.
Like this is make your own social network. And then there's like these tools that helps you make your own mobile app, let's say.
It's right at the peak of the mobile innovation explosion around the release of the iPhone. You start to have all these like very simple apps that created mobile apps.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah.
Like no code apps that lets you make.
Yeah. I guess I would call this the third wave of the hype cycle. It starts out this is the third wave. The first wave is like everyone just hates on it. Second wave is like everyone's like crazy excited and doing all these things with it and building all these clones. Yeah. And the third wave is like, it's so exciting. Everybody wants to have their own version of it, right? So we're clearly at that place where it's like, everybody wants to have a vibe tool where you do prompting and natural language stuff and poof, out comes something amazing on the other side.
Correct. So like, so this is interesting, right? Like I want to know like how many people actually built their own vibe coding platform and what 10. Would that even exactly. And like, what would it even look like?
I don't know.
What's
it's exciting. So my reaction, that's why it made me think of that when Ning came out. I have the same reaction, which is like really interesting. Like maybe a lot of engineering involved.
Right.
Who would want to do this?
Who wants to do this? Correct.
But always in the back of my mind is like, and I'm sure that's the investors and the people building this, is like, is there some use case we haven't imagined that some kid somewhere in suburban Edmonton is doing right now in his basement and is creating something cool with it? Like it's always a possibility.
I don't know. Maybe. But like it never works out that way, right? Like I think what'll eventually happen is somebody like Salesforce will use this so that you can vibe code like Salesforce apps.
All right, I got a great story for you. I worked with a guy.
Yeah.
Very smart guy, very distinguished. He went to fantastic university. I don't want to give out too much information. Top tier global school. He was awesome. I really liked him. I thought he was super brilliant. And all his buddies from like super like first tier, like elite school, who had this startup that got acquired for the startup that I was working at. We were hanging out and he was telling me like how like him and his friends and their little startup and their little co-working space were sharing with their team. And he used to laugh at the team. They're like, who are these bros? Like, what is this guy's building? Like, these guys are idiots. Like, we're the elite, like, super genius guys building this thing that got acquired for, like, you know, for them, it would be like a modest outcome. I thought it was fantastic. I was like, you guys did really well. But the best part was, like, he's telling this story and he goes, Gregory, do you know who those guys were in that room next to me? I'm like, I have no idea. Snapchat.
Nice.
I love that story. Nice. Like, you never know, like, who the people are building these things and what the outcome is going to be.
That's true.
So many random outcomes like that. That's why I said, like, dude, there could be some kid vibe coding some meta vibe thing in some basement somewhere. It's all cold in Edmonton already. He's just like,
just colding away,
watching hockey. Yeah. Right. And he's building something cool.
Yeah.
Wasn't the guy who invented, this is an interesting topic. We're losing everybody because it's just getting so down into the nerdy weeds. The guy who invented Linux. He's like Linus. From Finland.
Yeah, Linus.
Linus Torvalds, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he like, that story is just fantastic. Like, he lived in, you know, Finland. There's nothing to do all winter. He put up like, he like supposedly he blacked out all the windows and just spent like 6 months like refactoring the kernel from like micro Unix or something, right?
Totally.
And like just talk about locked in, right? This guy was just created something incredible, right? So there's people out there who do things like that. That's what I love about this stuff.
I would tend to agree. So like, I wonder if you can do that with vibe coded things though. So there's an argument in software development right now that like people like Linus fundamentally understood what he was doing, right? He was very low level. He saw a path to optimization. So he also made Git, which is a version control system.
Yeah.
So like he was deeply, deeply knowledgeable about what the things that he was building. But like the argument against vibe coding is that most people who's developing these things, they have no idea what they're doing in terms of like building software and building tools. And like it shows, right? Like the what was that social app that got hacked with people uploaded like driver licenses and all of their personal information?
The T app,
that's it. That's scary, you know.
I think that's a effective argument. I don't know if it's 100% true. I just like, you know, I'm just this super optimistic startup guy, right? So I always have to leave the possibility that someone's going to do something unanticipated, even with this. I would put it at like 90% accuracy that like the stuff that was doing, that Linus was doing like at the kernel level is what's required for like that kind of technical breakthrough.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So counter argument again is look at crypto.
I don't know. I don't know. Does it make like
there's so much money. There's so much money, right? It evolved in crypto. It was like, what, for a couple decades now. What's the thing that came out of crypto? It's like Coinbase and what, Robinhood?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting angle.
It's hacking on crypto, and so far, I have not seen anything that's like world changing.
I don't know. I struggle. I still think Bitcoin is the world changing thing, but Bitcoin is more of a Linux. Whoever made that, like, really made something.
Correct. Like the white paper of blockchain, especially crypto, made total sense.
It's a bona fide invention.
Correct.
Like a completely original, unknown previous to the invention of it. And the person who did that, however it happened, I have no idea. I wish I loved it. That's a whole other episode. Whoever created it though, it was massively innovative and.
Correct.
Right. They were like really at the core level of like coding this thing. It wasn't just a vibe coded tool.
Yeah, correct. And they were super, super early. They were like the very first, right? And then the second iteration, you can argue that the guy invented Ethereum, also super genius. right? But he invented in isolation, but not really.
Yeah, and that's where like these real innovative core technologies come from.
I think so. Correct.
Yeah.
So yeah, then like there's a whole bunch of kits that's hacking, like creating meme coins, creating like level twos, all of these random D apps, NFTs. None of them amounted to much.
Okay, so here's how you take it full circle. The kid who's vibe coding this stuff is their entry point into these things, and maybe that's how we discover more geniuses that have those incredible inventions inside of them.
Yeah, potentially. It's again, the counter argument to that is like the nerdy guy is not going to be vibe coding.
That's, well, they have to get started somehow, right? Like maybe they're nine vibe coding. They're like, this is really interesting. I want to do something way more in depth than what this stuff is able to do.
Potentially, yeah. That's kind of like our. That's what. So, for example, in school when you were taught programming, right? Mm-hmm. The first programming class you take in high school taught maybe like basic.
Yeah, I took basic.
Right. And then the basic, you made like a little like square that animated across the screen. Right. And then
I made some cool crappy games. Yeah.
Crappy games or whatever that is. Right. And then like the education system that says, oh, if we encourage kids to make these things, and eventually they may actually become like a hacker or like an actual software developer that's writing legit code. I don't think that ever like works this way.
Why?
Because the guy that's actually going to become software engineer, they're jumping to like actual legitimate things that you legitimately have use for. Right? Like, I jumped into like web development. Right, like I took classes that taught basic, and it was just absolutely the most boring thing ever.
All right. We should move on. What is this? You have another tweet in here.
So. Lots of vibe related this week. It's just, let's like rush through it. So Figma came out with a vibe coding.
This is cool. This is interesting.
I thought it is amazing. So like they gave you a couple prompts here that you can like just test. It's basically like Figma equivalent of Lovable. And then they gave you a prompt here that says design a user-friendly sign up flow, right, for a website. And it just goes off and designs it.
It just makes one. That's crazy.
It's crazy. And so I know for a fact that Lovable uses a couple systems and their code really sucks. Like the biggest problem with like vibe coding platform is, yeah, you'll be able to vibe code it, but then eventually you hit a wall and you need to like actual touch code or turn it over to developer. All of that code is not very usable because
I've talked to some people who claim, I don't know how to prove this, that if you create a technical document and you structure it all properly, you can go a lot further with vibe coding. It's hard to prove. And then it also requires a lot of technical knowledge. So I don't know where it starts to blur the lines, but that's what someone told me. They're like, why go? They had this system where they would create like technical documents, and it would spec out all the different vibe coded pieces that it needed and had a way to like assemble them all.
Yeah, I believe all of that, right? So this argument has been going on in software industry for a really long time. Basically, it's like, okay, do you do agile, which is like you don't really define what the initial requirements are. You just like take it one step at a time. Or do you do something called waterfall, which is like you literally at the very beginning, you spec out everything that you ever need in a technical document,
right?
And then you start development. So like now we're back into like this argument of do you just vibe code and see whatever sticks?
Oh, there it is. So that's it. That's the whole thing.
This is the whole thing. Yeah. And I dug through the code. The code is actually laid out in a really clean way. A little bit better. I would say from just like quickly looking at it, it's a little bit better than Lovable. And like this layout, I like it. I think it's right on, you know?
I mean,
it's crazy.
Pretty templatized and pretty standardized at this point. It reminds me of like, this is going all the way back to like Steve Jobs and object-oriented programming, the concept that you just have all these off-the-shelf pieces. I feel like that's also that's more what I see emerging. I hadn't even thought about it being waterfall to some degree. I look at it more like this stuff has been thought out, like user login experience. Like, we know what these things should like look like, and there's only so many options. So they're pretty standard. Like, why reinvent the wheel with any of this stuff?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's actually a couple of memes going around on X right now. Well, that's like people saying, I redesigned Stripe, and it was literally just like the same exact design as every other app. So it's just like, yeah, we're just templatizing all of the look and feel.
Yeah, we've kind of solved all the design problems at a high level, and you make small changes here and there, but we know what the optimal user experience is for a lot of this stuff.
Correct.
With Figma vibe coding tools, what do you think are the implications for like product design, product managers?
I think product managers are becoming developers. And developers are, let's say, becoming, I don't know, designers. It's all blending together.
Yeah. Do you think it's so right now, right? It's being like, well, you and I have talked about this, like the bundling and unbundling. I feel like the same thing's happens in the job world.
Yeah.
Like they get bundled. And then I remember when they get unbundled too, that happens. So there was a time where, when I first started, you had to code and design and do everything yourself. And then I remember the day where I was like, what do you mean? Like, there's specialization in this world. I was like, I like doing everything myself. I was like very arrogant. Like, I do it way better when I do it
myself. That's exactly it. Yeah,
exactly. And so we're going through that world again where it's like, oh, everything's getting bundled
together again. Correct.
Uh-huh. And then there always comes a point where specialization starts to emerge for whatever reason. And you start to divide up the roles and, you know, the old timers think you're kind of bloating the organization
it does seem that
like, yes. Yeah, they're like, this is the new way, dude. Like, why are you so stuck in the old way?
It does seem like that way. We go through these cycles. I think right now, if you're a generalist, you win. Like in the next few years, if you're a generalist, you'll be a very, very good spot.
I agree 100%. I think I think that's what most organizations will be looking for in the future in the most roles. Like, you're a product person, but you're also a great designer. You're good at like front end, and you can like manage a lot of the product stuff. Yeah, I think that's exactly where this stuff heads.
Yeah, but then eventually we'll specialize again.
Yeah, it's inevitable, right? Like, stuff gets established, and there's reasons to specialize too, because you need to have workflows that are consistent and repeatable over time. There's a lot of reasons why that things get specialized. Yeah. All right. What's this next one? Oh, this one. This is crazy.
This. Okay. So there's a couple. I'll briefly talk about this Facebook vibe thing. Lots of vibe this week. Lots of vibes.
A lot of vibes. You got a lot of vibes? Okay.
It came out with, Grok's Imagine product, where you can literally just like generate images. Facebook came out with the exact same thing. I'm not exactly sure why, but seems like they saw the potential to do this.
Bro, those are the cheesiest images like I've ever seen.
100%.
I thought this was just the worst slop I've ever seen in my life. Like, don't use this.
Super intelligence.
I would not. I was doing some like image generation today. I was using Runway ML. It's really good. Stuff looks amazing. This just looks like crappy AI slop. Like, I can clearly tell it's completely cartoonish.
Yeah. Correct. So they use Midjourney and Black Forest Labs. Midjourney is kind of a little bit cheesy. This basically screams Midjourney.
Like, if you want to make a children's movie or a Pixar film, like, I guess it would work, but like, there's not that many people who want to do that.
Who would actually use this, right?
Or just that look and feel. It just like, it looks cartoony and silly.
Yeah. So like, I wonder what the use case is. Is it for kids? Maybe,
you know, sometimes like I feel like I'm getting old. Like I don't know if I feel like on Instagram and with the like younger people, they would just not care and they would use it. That's what I think.
There you go.
Like if you're like,
yeah, there you go.
12 to 22, those images, you don't, it's just kind of fun to play with and you post on your Instagram and you're not, it's not that important to them. Like that it's low quality or doesn't meet my certain standards. Like I think for the teenager or whatever, it doesn't matter. They're just having fun with it. They like that they're creating things. I think that is perhaps the number one thing people like about social media is they made it. That's what they like.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Because remember how like Instagram was this like hyper curated, like everything needs to look beautiful. Millennials were all about like depicting the best parts and like overproductionized. And then TikTok was like completely rejection of that. So like maybe with this, 100%. It's like the cycle, right? People just like to make things, put it on social media,
and see. That's exactly what I think. And it looks cartoony, it looks corny. Like doesn't matter. They made it. It's fun. It's easy to use.
Yeah. So question here, right? Is this a generational thing? Is this just like an age thing? Do you think as like Gen Z ages into working age, they will not use these apps? Or would like in 20 years, we would just see these things as like everywhere?
That's a good question. My guess is there's a generational angle to this stuff that, or maybe it's more accurate to frame it as like where you are in your like development, mostly by age, determines how your age and like your kind of like worldview at that age determines how you use these tools. So I think the tools are maybe popular with a lot of different people at different age groups, but they see them and view them differently. And so if you're younger, if you're younger, it has a much bigger impact. It's new, you're new. You don't have all the legacy that older people do or remember certain ways things were done. So you have a very different view of these types of tools, not just that tool, but all of this stuff. It's just, that's the world you've always known. It's not like different for you. It's new and exciting and it's what you've always known. Exactly. So you have like a way different worldview, which I think in the future means that those things look really old to you faster.
Of course, you've seen it before, right?
Well, you grew up with it. So then you grew up with like it. 25, 27. You're like, dude, that's what I was doing when I was like 15. That is lame.
So, okay. So it's lame, but then nostalgia hits, right? It's the same way that like 90s appeal is coming back, right? And then hilariously, so basically what I'm predicting is like in 20, 30 years, all of these like shitty...
Oh yeah.
AI created things will come back as like retro.
For sure. I'm at the age where like nostalgia just seems to know no end. So actually I think I can even frame it. I understand it demographically like when nostalgia really starts to take off. Cause I think Hollywood is very good at using this.
Right.
When people have kids. So anywhere from like mid 30s, people having kids later, right? So like in your 30s to later, you have children. And they make like children's movies and children's content. And they realize that if they add a lot of nostalgia to it, set it in the 80s or something, so the parents enjoy it too. And I think that's where like the nostalgia really kicks in.
Right.
I think this has always been around. Like I remember when I was a kid, there was this movie called Stand By Me that was about kids in the 50s. And I thought it was like really fun. Yeah, this is very famous. I thought it was a really fun movie. But I realized now as an adult that I was really young. That movie was designed to appeal to like my parents.
I see.
They kind of remember that. Maybe they're like, it was a little bit of a, not perfect, but like, and I think Hollywood got better at this. So I think it's always been a trick. And that's why like Stranger Things, right? It's set in the 80s. Like I remember the 80s. All these people my age remember the 80s. And kids love it because it's kind of fun. And it's about kids and it's a kid show. So they're enjoying it. And the parents are enjoying it because the nostalgia aspect is great for them. And so I think nostalgia is a very powerful tool once people have children. I think that's where it really kicks in. I don't know if it ever ends. Like as I get older, I see nostalgia maybe become more powerful for me, or maybe it's a trend. Yeah. I don't know. Like I've been very into nostalgic music and anything 80s. And like, I see it everywhere now, like retro computing and big desk energy. And it looks like Windows 95 and stuff. Like maybe there's something else going on, but I just see it everywhere right now.
100%. Right. Like exactly the same thing. Like 90s desktop is coming back. That's super nostalgic. So do you think like as tech like blends together, that nostalgia will go away a little bit? Because it'll all be around.
That's a, like, so, well, it's a really good question. I think that there's something about technology and nostalgia that's new and unique.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, yeah, there's something very special about like, oh, remember CD-ROMs and remember cartridges and remember Nintendo and like that like all these different like technology, like the evolution is so dramatic, right? You go from like, I remember big floppy disks. I remember small floppy disks. I remember SciQuest. I remember zip disk. I remember thumb drives and external hard drives. Right. Like I remember, cloud storage. I remember Dropbox. I mean, dude, like the amount of like storage devices and CD-ROMs, right? The progression of this stuff in my lifetime, it's mind-boggling. Like I could probably write a 500-page novel on all the different eras and all the different tools that like I've learned and unlearned over, like insane. Like it's, I never even thought about it. It's quite remarkable. Like how many tools like I've had to learn in my generation.
Okay. So now the question is as technology gets better and better, right? The contrast gets smaller and smaller, right? Like
the changes. Is less and less,
for example, like I don't think we'll ever be nostalgic of iPhone 10. You know, like
say that now.
I don't think so.
People are nostalgic for the first iPhone, right? The those in iPhone. Box shrink wrap for sure. They go for a ton of ton of money.
Yeah, like
I think people. Okay, so two things. I think I would like to say something like I feel very lucky that I remember the pre-internet, post-internet world, and I got to like live through all of that and got to see all of these technology cycles. And I feel like everyone in my generation feels really good about that. It was really exciting. And the nostalgia for us is very emotional. So I think that's something very specific to my generation, all of that stuff that I just described. And so I think you're correct that like the change happening now, like last 10 years, it's slightly less exciting. But I do think that like people will be nostalgic for things that we don't really anticipate right now. I could imagine Angry Birds and like a mobile game nostalgia. I can imagine other types of like applications, early app nostalgia, maybe some generations of like iPhones, maybe iPad mini nostalgia. I think it's all totally possible. We won't know for another
10 years. Yeah.
But like your argument that like maybe the change isn't quite as dramatic, it seems logical to me.
Right. Maybe we'll be nostalgic of like GPT-3. You know, that I could see that.
I think it's hard to say. Well, it's a really interesting question. This is like the nerdiest discussion we've had, perhaps.
About like being nostalgic all day. Trying to predict what people will be nostalgic of in terms of like tech.
All right.
That's.
Yeah, we should move on. Let's do this Amigo AI.
Okay, yeah. Thing. So again, it's about vibes and AI. I think this is
it's about vibes.
It's insane. I think we're getting to like Uncanny Valley area now where you really can't tell what's AI and what's not AI.
So this app is like that guy in the corner in the tiny little box on the right. That's him, and then that is his avatar that looks like a real person and sounds like a real person
in real time on potentially on FaceTime on a call.
Holy smokes, man!
Yeah. I think we're getting to the area where this is becoming more and more. So, like, obviously, this is person level, right? So very recently this week, actually a couple of days ago, a video of like the CN Tower on fire went viral on Facebook, I believe. And lots of people,
and it's, like,
it's AI generated. Even my parents believed it. They were like, hey, are you okay? I saw this video of CN Tower on fire. Yeah.
Really?
And like, it was all over the news.
Yeah, we're crossing over into the so this this is something like I have talked about this for a long time, that eventually all this AI generated content is going to just blur reality. And we're going to need tools and techniques to authenticate content. And I think we're starting to head into that era at this moment.
So like, okay, we kind of had this conversation as well, which is like,
Yeah, a long time we talked about this.
On this specific topic. And then the second thing is how it relates to the internet. So like, for whatever the reason, we just stuck with that everything that you see on internet should be like a fact.
Oh, yeah, you know, that internet is basically factual information.
But that's the only... And it's not like, yes, that's how internet started. Well, actually, internet started as like just a communication device for like for people, right? For researchers, so they can share.
But what did they mean that? It was all facts. It was never a format or a medium for fiction. That was all research papers. Like the expectation about the internet for most people is you're going to go there and get.
But that's not true, though, right? Like, because in the 2000s, when I used the internet, I was in all these forums and we talked about stuff. We wrote, like, for example, I was in random IRC channels. It was like role playing, it was games. So if you involve all of that, that was never facts.
Yeah, but that's not the. I hear what you're saying. Right. And you can go and get entertainment, but the vast majority of content and the medium is viewed as a factual. I think even now it's.
I actually think medium. That's so like going back to the generational debate. I actually think that's a generational gap. So like people, millennials by far. Only used internet as a research for school and work.
Dude, millennials wouldn't know a fact if it hit them in the face. If it popped up in their TikTok feed. Yeah. Well, anyway, that's called Amigo
AI. Yeah, there's a, or that's what Grok is saying.
That thing is crazy. And I think like fake content is going to be a massive problem in 6 months. Like if this is starting to happen and that we need a way to authenticate it. And I've always thought it's blockchain. There's some way that like all the media gets minted on the blockchain, and that's the way you know that it's legit. There needs to be some kind of watermarking or fingerprinting or something. I guess the other way to authenticate it is like, did it come from like an account that I'm familiar with? Like people know I've been posting my account for many years, right? Another way. We're going to need these methodologies because like that stuff is the cat's out of the bag now. I've been waiting for this moment. I thought it would have happened earlier, but here we are. Yeah. Like, AI generated content is going to be really easy to
fake all kinds of stuff in it. Good.
Indistinguishable from the real thing.
But the internet is going to be so much more entertaining now. Like, look at this guy. He's having so much fun. Instead of like this. I remember all the YouTube videos of guys like in their basement doing like crazy Star Wars moves with lightsabers.
The opportunity for pranks is enormous. Like I can't wait to start calling people with the old man face or whatever, right? Like that's gonna be great.
You could be jumping on the show. You could be Gandalf. I could be
all right. We gotta move on. We got two more things to talk about. Okay, we gotta do this one. We got more ChatGPT stuff. Pulse. What is it?
Okay, so basically it's a tool that think of it as like a research tool, but it also helps you plan things. Essentially, you could basically ask it to, hey, help me plan a trip to, Venice in Italy. And then it could ask you a whole bunch of follow-up questions like, okay, book me a hotel, give me flights. All of this could be done in ChatGPT. There's existing services, companies that helps you do this. The presentation over here is also talking about like how me train for a marathon. It'll engage with you, not just like one way. So I mean, like,
have you used this thing?
No, I've not tried it.
How is this different from like what you do at ChatGPT now?
I think it's a little bit more engaging.
It just has a different
UI. Different UI, and it also it's kind of like an asynchronous. Asynchronous researcher.
It works asynchronously. I'm with you. Like, I started doing a lot with AI recently and MCP servers and all this stuff. And I'm like, this feels like command line internet computing from the 80s.
Exactly.
It's not engaging at all. Like, exactly. I'm like doing this ChatGPT stuff and I'm just like, I'm like the average person, like all this text, this is so boring. Like, this is not how regular people want to use the internet. So I think if you can have a more graphical interface with buttons and it's more visual, like, and less reading focused, you'll open it up the audience to a much wider aperture of
people. So I think that's what that's what ChatGPT is trying to get to. Yeah,
I completely agree. Okay, we've got one last thing, which I think is an excellent.
It's perfect.
Excellent thing to end on. Have you been the receiver of a lot of work slop? hopefully not for me.
No. Well, I mean, I am a producer of work slop in forms of Reddit comments. I'm not proud of it, but
oh my god,
I am.
I like the way this was framed in this Harvard Business Review article. A confusing contradiction is unfolding in companies embracing generative AI tools. While workers are largely following mandates to embrace the technology, few are seeing it create real value. Consider, for instance, the number of companies with fully AI-led processes nearly doubled last year, while AI has likewise doubled since use at work since 2023. Yet this report from the MIT Media Lab found 95% of organizations see no measurable ROI. So much activity, so much enthusiasm, so little return.
Yeah, this is interesting, right? Like, it's interesting that they're saying enterprise is not seeing productivity gains, but...
Yeah, like what this is saying, I think, the opportunity for abuse is quite dramatic. So you could just like rip off a nonsensical presentation, post, anything that like looks professional, and then you read it and you're just like, what kind of AI garbage is this? You see those comments all the time on LinkedIn, I get them on Reddit, X now, where they
anytime anyone detects
it just repeats the post. Right. Or it's nonsensical. Like it sounds valuable, but it's not. It doesn't say anything. It's really strange. And so I can totally see this. How like organizations have implemented AI. And what's going on is like people are just using it to like avoid doing any real work.
So basically, we can produce a lot of garbage, and then the real work becomes reviewing them. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're headed in a different direction when I cut you off, but because I thought it was important to make this point about like work slop, and I have seen this, I've been the recipient of this, but I do think that you and I both believe, and I think show that AI is a massive productivity booster. It's just that organizations are not able to harness it for a lot of reasons. So this is like all the work that you and I are doing, like the way you vibe coded that dashboard, like we're utilizing and doing things like that all the time. And we're getting a ton of value out of it, but we don't have all of the like layers of like legacy and approvals and compliance. And like large organizations have all kinds of things that are like blocking the progress of them.
Yeah. I think so
tapping into the benefits of AI.
So this is actually super important, and I don't have the answer, but I can just tell you what I've observed. As I work with more clients, we use AI to generate content, right? Like I'm sure like everyone else. If there's any kind of approval process, the first draft of the content is much worse. And it's just as simple as like, oh, somebody's going to read this over. So let me not look at it as much as I would doing it myself. This is just, I don't know what it is, but this is just has been manifesting this way. So like, if the process is just like, okay, you can use whatever tool you want, use AI, write it yourself, whatever you want. And then nobody's going to review it. You're just going to push this out. The content has been pretty good. There's hit and misses, but overall it works. But as soon as like we introduce mandatory review, the content it's just terrible. It declines
in value.
This has nothing to do with AI. This is human behavior.
You think that they're just going to rip off a first crappy draft so that their
somebody's going to review it. It's somebody else's problem.
Let them take care of it.
Somebody else's problem.
Yeah, I think there's a multitude of reasons. I think that's so. I think what I would say, in perhaps a less cynical way, that like what you're describing is bureaucracies have a nature to themselves and they work in a certain way. And that's when you have to have like lots of people weigh in on certain things, the incentives are very different than if you're doing the stuff on your own or on a small team. So I think that the benefits of AI are dramatic and real.
100%.
It's just that like large organizations struggle to take advantage of them. And this is like the classic innovator's dilemma. Like this is why startups exist. Like this is the reasons that this is happening have been around since the beginning of time. And I think I've always said that, like, and a lot of people have said that this is why startups exist. If big organizations were good at adopting and creating innovative technologies, platforms, changing and evolving in a way that was really effective, like startups would just not
100%.
Exist. But the fact that like large organizations struggle with any of this stuff is why there's an opportunity for people to create new exciting companies.
Yeah. So like you can't, I all of these articles are just, they're surface level.
Exactly. Well, that's all we have time for today.
Awesome. That was good.
All right, dude. That was fun.